Hello, and welcome to the Center for Faith and Work Los Angeles Faith and Work Podcast. In anticipation of our annual conference, Meaningful Work in an Age of Disruption, coming up this Saturday, April 2nd, we're proud to present part two of our conversation with one of our thoughtful speakers, Michaela O'Donnell. Michaela is Executive Director of the Max DePree Center for Leadership at Fuller Seminary, and we'll be talking with our own Robert Cavolo, Director of Vocational Discipleship at CFW LA. Let's listen in for part two of their conversation.
So I'm here with Michaela O'Donnell, who is a professor of marketplace leadership, executive director at the Max DePree Center. And we are talking about her book, Make Work Matter, Your Guide to Meaningful Work in a Changing World. And Michaela, I've really enjoyed our conversation. And one of the things that's come up is how work can either kind of cause us to be deformed. Is that the right way of saying it? To be kind of like take away and impoverish our humanity, or can cause us to flourish. So I want to talk a little bit more about that. And we had mentioned the need to lament when things don't work right. But maybe there's some other aspects to the way in which our work can either be making us more human or less human. And do you think that's true, Michaela? And can you maybe give us a few more things that you think, yeah, we need to keep an eye out for in terms of how work is going to either make us really feel like we're flourishing or detract from our lives?
Yeah, I think that's great. I think maybe the phrase I would use is malformed. It can malform us. And I think for starters, like, we have to name that it's a very privileged, historically, it's a privileged conversation. And I'm talking about even just the last like decade or two, recent history, in which we get to think about how work forms our humanity. A lot of people around the world and over the course of human history are not thinking about work as a means of self-actualization or fulfillment, or what it gives to us. It is the thing we do in order to meet basic needs. And so that utilitarian aspect of work, I don't think we want to lose that, right? That's mm-hmm. like that. I think that's actually mm-hmm. part of why work gets so sticky, is because we are in this what does it owe us season of humanity.
And particularly even in our affluent Western culture, if you can get a job driving a bus and you're in a country where you don't have those kind of privileges and access, that you might just feel like who cares how it's forming me or not forming me? I'm putting bread on the table. So yeah, there is something about this conversation in particular that so maybe we can pick that up as well. Like, what do we say to those folks that don't have that, can't like, yeah, I want to find my dream job and be a creative that pursues my passions.
Yeah, I mean, let's start there and then we'll go back to the forming. So I was in a conversation, and I was doing a workshop a few months ago, and a woman was telling me her story. And the story was basically her wrestling with her own privilege as the child of immigrant parents. She described her parents' work as, picking fruit in the fields. And then she had this like white collar, like she wore, it was a white collar job. And that dissonance she was feeling and the privilege. And as a group, we talked through just the complexity there. So on the first hand, like, she in her job actually found it harder to see the fruits of her labor than her parents. It's like right there it is. Like, there is literally the fruit, right? Like, there are the strawberries. And she's got to like get in touch with the fruits of her labor in a different way that actually requires a particular kind of work. And now she's got to steward the privilege financially, probably in her family system. There's just all kinds of layers. And so I think that there's, even for me, it's like, am I connected to the fruit of my work? Can I name it? Can I name the fruit of my labor? I'm not driving a bus where I pick up kids and drop them off to school, and their safe arrival is the fruit of my labor. Like, that's a very tactile thing. So I, I don't want to elevate one over the other, because I think that there's just a lot of value in tangible fruit kind of work where you can see the fruit of your labor. Then I would say for people in any kind of position, whether we can see tangible fruits of our labor or whether that feels more distant and we're wrestling with that, we go back to this formation question that you posed. It's like, what do we look for? How do we look for it? I don't know about you, Robert, but one of the things that I hear most from people, both when I'm talking about this book, when I'm talking to people through the Dupree Center, is that the number one factor that has of whether I'm going to feel formed in a positive way or malformed in a negative way in my work has a lot to do with other people, mm-hmm. right? Has a lot to do with the other people. Like, are there people I'm spending my time with, my days with, working toward common objectives? Mm-hmm. Are they like kind and decent? Do they show gratitude? Is my boss, does she or he care about my humanity? Mm-hmm. Or am I sort of a cog in this system that's about kind of the, you know, bottom line at all costs, and where I feel like I'm not actually valued? Those are very real questions. And so I think we see some of this coming to the forefront in the Great Resignation. A lot of industries, the way they're set up, you think, and I won't even go into naming them, but certain industries, the way they're set up, really don't make a ton of space for some of that basic stuff for people. Mm-hmm, and it's mm-hmm. hard, it's driving. Mm-hmm. And then you got a whole nother class of people that's like, the people I work with are kind of not great, or they're asking me to work too, my bosses are asking me to work too hard. And so that, I think people are wrestling with these questions of formation, malformation, which connects back to, as Christians, like, what does it mean to be in touch with the fruit of our labor? Do we get to be in touch with it? Are there longer life cycles of growth and harvest and, you know, planting that come in certain kinds of jobs and industries? Probably. Mm-hmm. So I think the questions of formation, malformation, and then this being really honest about the nature of privilege are they're just really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are important, and they're big subjects. And and then there's also just, I mean, when I was reading your book, one of the things, and as we bring up the subject, one of the things that comes to my mind is I did some research in my doctoral work on ritual in the Middle Ages. And one of the strange things is that when they weren't in a meritocracy, when you're in a society where it's like, I'm a baker, my yep. father's a baker, grandfather's a baker, like, you don't have any expectations that you're going to go and just your work is going to like make you come alive and you're going to become self-actualized and all of your passions are going to be realized. In your mind, you are just simply kind of, so some societies actually don't carry the same problems that we carry because of expectations we have. One of the things I loved in your book, there's just so many things, I wish we could just spend all day talking, but one of the things I loved in your book was when you talked about the importance of debunking passions as the only way of understanding calling. You said there's a dysfunctional belief regarding work, and it's that we need to pursue the holy grail of our passions. Yeah. Why is it that pursuing, and we hear that everywhere, pursuing your passions is so important. Why is that a problem, Michaela?
Well, I think it's a problem for a couple of reasons. One, it's very us focused. It's very, again, like when we are the center of our idealized version of something, it feels very different than the way of Jesus, mm-hmm. who says, like, you know, worship God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and treat your neighbor as yourself. It doesn't necessarily say don't care about yourself. If you're a non-factor, I'm not saying that. But when we are the center of what's going to make things like happy for us, you know, I worry a little bit about that. It feels dissonant with the Christian story. Mm-hmm. The second reason why it's problematic is because I don't think it's very practical, and I'm a pragmatist. Like, I'm a businesswoman, I'm an entrepreneur, so I'm a pragmatist. So we, you know, we send basically kids, you know, 22-year-olds, 21, 22, 23-year-olds. And we tell them, like, go and find something you're passionate about, and you'll never work a day in your life. And developmentally speaking, like, they are just getting going with knowing mm-hmm. who they are. They're just getting going. And the data shows that the only way you can truly know what it is you love to do, what your sense of particular giftedness or flow is to actually try things.
Yeah.
Right. It's like if I would have asked my 22-year-old self, what is Michaela good at? I might've said some things, who knows what I would have said. I probably wouldn't capture what 38-year-old Michaela would say. And critically, Robert, like 38-year-old Michaela cannot capture what 60-year-old Michaela, like God willing, will know, right? Oh, Michaela was actually the, you know, and maybe, so I just think that we've got to make space in our models of what's ideal for that longevity of development as a human to play out.
Yes.
And focusing on passion as the rubric of whether a job is worth doing really negates all that stuff.
I love it. I love it. You know, Michaela, I just love this theme. It fits with so many other things you do in your book that are just really, I don't know, if I was to summarize your book, I'd say, I would hand it to somebody and say, this is going to cause you to think about just the deeper resources in which the deeper world that's going on underneath your work. Because underneath your work, there's all kinds of things happening. You know, we have stories we've been told about what work is going to do for us. We have things that we don't know we're even bringing to our work. We have ways in which our work is deforming us. And some of that is shaped through our culture, you know, all these things. One of my favorite quotes, and I like triple underline it, is you say, callings from God are less like treasures waiting to be uncovered in the sand and more like slabs of marble waiting to be chiseled away over time. I loved that quote, which is pretty much a summary of what you just said, which is if there's a process. And that's one of the things that's beautiful in your book, if you don't mind me kind of just going off on how much I enjoyed your book, is just that you really deal with this fact that work was meant to be something meaningful and rich, but that doesn't mean that it's always easy and it always makes sense and that there's no ambiguities to deal with. And so I just love that. And maybe you could say something a little bit more about ambiguities, because I think a lot of our listeners are probably tuning in and they probably find themselves with ambiguities and maybe where they're going, where they've come from, or what's going on in their job right now.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for saying that, Robert. That means a lot. Yeah, ambiguity. I think, you know, one of the things I say in the book is that all the rules of how work used to happen have changed for sort of the information based West, at least. And at the heart of that is we have to be prepared to be unprepared. The ambiguity and change are just going to be our constant companions. Whether it's a global pandemic or witnessing war on TikTok. There's so much happening right as we speak. And that's not even what's happening in our work. Okay, get into new technologies and learn this new job description because we've downsized, or now we're going to go do this thing. And so you got to change it. Or you used to be awesome at this, but everybody thinks differently now. So just plays out on so many levels. We're doing some current research at the Dupree Center. Now, I'm not allowed to say that this is like formal findings yet, but what I can say is this. We are hearing from a number of people. We did 18 focus groups. And one of the things that we're hearing is that in leadership in the coming age, one of the top things in the list is going to require the capacity to tolerate ambiguity. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, kind of makes me want to take a just deep breath, because I'm like, okay. And to your point earlier, that feels like, I don't know. Did you ever play that game Tetherball in elementary school?
Yes.
Okay. So I like Tetherball. It's like, you got a tire on the ground. It's very unsophisticated. Tire on the ground, a pole that goes up, and a large string with a ball attached to it. And you try to hit it back and forth, and you're trying to like get the ball to go all the way around. And when I picture like what it's going to need to feel like to tolerate ambiguity, I picture us kind of like that. Like we are going to probably be like whipped around by the wind and change, but like we are attached, we are tethered. Like we are tethered to Jesus Christ, the story of God, like what we know to be the arc of God's mission in the world and what God continues to reveal through the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. And that allows us in these moments of feeling so overwhelmed by all that's happening and the capacity to solve the ambiguity with some sort of known solution. Like, okay, I'll just do this or this or this, right? To reach for control. it allows us to like just say, okay, we're being whipped around by the wind right now, and that feels very chaotic, and like we're tethered. Mm-hmm. And to like stay there and ask, like, what is this ambiguity? What does this change have to teach us? How can we be people who know how to weather the storm? Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I think ambiguity is at the heart of the work of humans, and particularly Christians, as we go forward.
Michaela, this has been rich, and I just wish we could luckily we're going to see you at our annual conference, and you and I are actually both colleagues at Fuller, so hopefully we'll be rubbing shoulders in the future much more. But I'm just so thankful for your time, Michaela, and I'm grateful that you were able to join with us. We're looking forward to hearing more from you at our conference, and I guess I just want to end with one thing that I just thought was beautiful was you go after this, the importance of relationships, that if we're going to have deeply, and you kind of mentioned already, but deeply meaningful work, it really is about showing up at the workplace with building into it this idea that relationships are, and the quality of my relationships are part and parcel of the success of my work. And can you just say a little bit more about that? And in fact, you even said, I thought this was fascinating. You said, we need to wed together empathy, imagination, and risk, which, you know, I thought, wow, that you don't usually connect those three. There was lots of things you did in the book. I'm like, I never knew, that's really good. But this is one of those really, and it was in the context of relationships and how we're going to think about our work outside of just simply the tasks at hand and other meanings that are taking place. So can you just share, we'll have this be kind of the last question.
Yeah, great. So three times in the last month, I've been in a room full of people and I broke them into small groups. And I said to them, who knows, maybe I'll do this when I'm with y'all in April. And I said, I want you to reflect back on all your work, paid or unpaid. And I want you, like, what sticks out as particularly meaningful to you? And every single time from every single table, there was a common theme. And the theme was that it had something to do with other people. And I am very convinced, Robert, that so much of the work worth doing comes down to how we're doing it with others, who we're doing it on behalf of, who is helping us, that people are so, so central. And these sort of muscles, practices, modalities, whatever you want to call them that you named, empathy, imagination, and risk, are ways of engaging in the midst of people, right? Practicing empathy, letting that give way to imagination, letting imagination fuel risk-taking and like going there, right? Like risking it for the sake of those people, empathizing because the people we're around really matter, imagining because we believe in a good and large God who's doing all kinds of stuff, right? And a story that for all the chaos that's around us, one that is marked by hope and light. And so I just, like, if you do nothing else, if you take nothing else away from this podcast, it's that the people that you work alongside or for, right? Paid or unpaid. So my work as a mother, my work in my neighborhood, my work as an executive director, as a business owner, all those things, like, let people bubble up to the top, notice them, spend time with them, empathize with their needs, and that strengthens your own sense of quality of work, right? Mm.
Yes. Thank you, Michaela. Really have enjoyed our discussion today. And thank you for just taking the time out. If you'd like to pick up Michaela's book, once again, it's called Make Work Matter, Your Guide to Meaningful Work in a Changing World. Thanks again, Michaela.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you for joining us today for part two of our conversation with Michaela O'Donnell. Are you interested in hearing more from Michaela, or curious to dive deeper into what meaningful work looks like in our world today? Join us for our annual Faith and Work Conference this Saturday, April 2nd. Tickets, details, and our full lineup of speakers can be found on our website, faithandworkla.com. If you enjoyed today's content, please subscribe, rate, and share this podcast to help us reach more Angelenos who are looking to reimagine their work. To stay up to date on the latest with CFWLA, make sure you're following us on all major social media platforms at our handle, @FaithAndWorkLA. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next time.